Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on the weekly, Dungeon Scrawl is in beta, Tunnels and Trolls Bundle of Holding, 5e Diversity Errata, Paizo Apologizes, and Origins Online Cancelled. So how's it going?
Yeah, we started off by saying I dispute your claims of it is nice outside.
nice and hot.
Nice and warm, yeah, because right. It is not. We're right. Officially in Japanese summer, which means you need a change of shirt. When you arrive at the office.
Right. Yeah, so biking to work and stuff, yeah, you need a shower.
Yeah. As someone who has to transport their kid to daycare and then the bicycle, it's not fun.
The first thing that I saw, something that I really liked, a developer called Probable Train, I think it's a single user, has worked on a project called Dungeon Scrawl. And Dungeon Scrawl is a mapping tool. Mm-hmm. And it's a really versatile web-based mapping tool. I'm not sure what language he wrote it in. But you basically are just drawing primitive shapes. They're drawn on standard graph paper.
Right.
And you have different styles. So you can have that kind of old-school hatching around the edges or do something really clean. And also kind of switch colors. So you can do like sci-fi.
Oh,
so
cool.
You can do like, you know, a gray grid with an orange border and things. So thematically, it can be changed a lot. And you can also switch to an isometric mode.
Ooh.
So yeah, draw a map and then switch to isometric. So you can display it on a virtual tabletop without, you know, you don't have any perspective. So it makes it a lot easier to display everything that's going on. Maybe easier to kind of see distances and things without things having to get smaller.
That's pretty cool. And I may have seen this and not realize it was called Dungeon Scrawl.
Mm.
Because, yeah, I've seen something similar where it was just kind of like a short GIF or a video of, yeah, basically someone drawing rectangles on what looked like a grid. And then a couple clicks later and, hey, presto, it's got that OSR style hashing around it and then switched up to what looked kind of like a big old brush and drew like a wavy line for a tunnel. And then here's a circle to make kind of like a cavern thing. And a couple clicks later and it looks like a pretty decent map. Someone who really likes that style, that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's got procedural generation for labyrinths and things.
Oh,
so, there's a lot of great stuff you can do, and you can export it as a PDF.
Ooh,
so,
nice.
Yeah, it's usable in just about anything and printing it as well. The developer started working on Dungeon Scrawl on May 8th and was just kind of playing around with generating grids and hatching, set up a Patreon. And so this is all funded by their Patreon.
Cool.
Right now, because it's been funded so well from just donation, it's in open beta completely for free, no paywall, no ads, and no locked features. So basically, I think it's going to remain completely open to use, and the people that are really liking the tool or want to use it more, then support the Patreon. And so he said this tool is in active development, features are being added, bugs are being squashed, and then feel free to contact him about any sort of request for features. So really, you know, nice communication. Huh. And there's a Discord then to take part in to discuss what's going on and follow the development of this. And then also on the Discord, there are rewards such as download keys for future standalone versions of the tool. So he's going to do like an executable, maybe not a web-based.
Okay,
and so if you're supporting it, then I'm sure any people on the Patreon at certain levels will probably have access to download keys. So it's a great project. I really love how easy it is to use and how beautiful it is. And basically, you make a map and you can just switch the style of the map.
Oh, cool.
Between, you know, sci-fi or old school or very clean, very printable, very printer-friendly RPG maps. So it's nice. Nice stuff. So I'll put a link for that in the description, and you guys should definitely check that out. I think it's a really fun tool. And I know there's a lot of tools like this, but this was the most easy to use and easy to kind of get your head around and had just about everything you would want to put together maps very quickly. And I could even see doing this on the fly. The DM just mapping or a player just mapping as you're going along from description.
Well, also, if it has procedural generated stuff, does that mean you could kind of click a couple buttons and get kind of like a random dungeon?
I haven't played around with it completely. The labyrinth operation lets you kind of designate an area as a maze or a labyrinth, and then it will give you something that actually has a path, you know, does pathing, and you actually can get through it, but it is a maze. I don't know as far as like, you know, completely just saying, make a dungeon 12 rooms, boom.
I'm
not sure if it does that, but it may, and that could very well be something in the future that it could handle, because if it can do that labyrinth, it could definitely do that sort of thing. So Tunnels and Trolls is available now as a bundle of holding. They did one back in September of 2018. This, of course, is including more books and is updating. Anybody that has that bundle, they update
the
PDFs. Right. If you don't know, Tunnels and Trolls is published by Flying Buffalo and was kind of reaction to Dungeons and Dragons. It's, D6.
I'm wondering if I actually have a copy of Tunnels and Trolls, possibly.
You probably do, yeah.
Random crap I've accumulated in my Google Drive, I probably do.
Yeah, so I would really suggest, these guys have done a really good job. We've talked about it before. It's a great alternative fantasy RPG. It's got a great sense of humor. Mm. It doesn't use race, it uses kindred. There's a lot of like nice differences to D&D. It got around a lot of the kind of problematic things that the D&D just went headfirst into.
Right. Okay.
And it also has a sense of humor. So the spells have kind of ridiculous names. Oh, go away. Or poor baby is the healing spell.
Okay. Okay.
Or take that, you fiend, is magic missile, basically.
I could see that. It sounds like a game you have to be in the mood to play, which sounds weird because, like, I could see wanting a more serious game and then someone saying, I'm going to cast Oh Poor Baby. And then you kind of go, really? Okay. But I mean, I guess that being said, if you did want a more serious game, you probably would not play Tunnels and Trolls, so you might find something else. Yeah.
Right. And I think they do a nice job of giving you an alternative, of getting a simple rule set, because it basically uses adds. So you have combat adds, and you basically roll dice of everybody. So here's the attack, here's the counterattack. Okay. So everything is rolled in big groups, and you determine rounds of combat, just boom, boom, boom. So combat is really fast and really simple to resolve. Yeah, it's fun. So I would suggest definitely checking that out if you don't know. And they are very famous for, Tunnels and Trolls is famous for their solo adventures.
Okay.
So they're the first ones to really do that. I think it may have even been before, like, the fighting fantasy books and things.
Oh, really?
Because they came out as a response to D&D and wanted people to be able to play this system. So they developed a lot of solo quests. Hmm. And so there's a lot, you can play the system. So you basically you roll a character and then you take them through a choose your own adventure, right. But you're doing all of the bookkeeping of the combat and everything. That's available until July 13th. And as you know, with bundles of holding, they get a little bit more expensive if you want everything as it goes on, because they kind of rate them based on how much people are paying.
Right.
The price does go up. So the sooner the better. So that's Tunnels and Trolls, the latest bundle from Bundle of Holding. So and that includes things like from their Kickstarter, Kickstarters and things that they've developed. And this is all the latest version of the deluxe rulebook.
Ooh.
Okay.
So now we're getting into it.
So now I'm gonna need your help on some of this. Wizards of the Coast has released 5e Diversity Errata.
Okay.
We talked about this a little bit before, and so my concern with going back into this old stuff that is old school and created with zero sensitivity, just this spirit of adventure, inspiration from old pulp and old fantasy, that it's going to get real granular. Like, what the things that you're going to be adjusting are going to be so small. And how about...
Okay, how about, okay.
We just move forward. We don't continue up, because every edition of D&D, of the world's greatest role-playing game, wants to include these famous adventures, the Tomb of Annihilation, the Temple of Elemental
Evil.
So they update these things, but they keep a lot of the original problematic stuff until now. And so now we're releasing Errata. I'm expecting then that you will become very involved in Dungeons & Dragons 5e because doing all of this. That's the biggest problem I have is, so if a gamer like you is not going to be interested in this, who are they necessarily doing this for?
I'm thinking, because I'm trying to formulate my answer.
Yes.
And I'm struggling to articulate just because someone like me who cares about that kind of thing will probably still not play the game doesn't mean they shouldn't fix these things moving forward.
Yeah, and I think moving forward, that makes sense. But basically, these old modules are going to look like redacted, classified documents. You know, they're just going to... I mean, that would be fun to take the old printed books, because this is errata done in the PDFs. So everything digitally will be available with these corrections. The old printed stuff is still the old printed stuff, and you just need to marker out...
Okay. This isn't something I've looked into. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to go, like, hunt this down to see what exactly is changing.
Oh, I've got some examples.
Okay,
yeah.
I would love to hear the examples because from what I'm hearing and discussions that I've seen happening on Twitter, which is basically the only place I live, there's a lot of problematic stuff in D&D regarding kind of like alignment, sort of the monolithic races, especially certain ones being evil, like the language used to describe those evil races, which is similar to language used to describe real world cultures, often in the negative light. And lastly, the big one of sort of colonialism and these adventurers basically going to other people's lands, killing those people and taking their stuff. With those kind of like big issues, I don't feel like errata can fix that. So, I mean, what are you going to... I don't know what they're doing. Are they simply replacing the word race with culture or kindred or something like that?
They haven't gone that far yet. Okay. Yeah, so this is just going back into previously published adventures. And so when they're available on D&D Beyond or whatever their digital platform is, they're going to have corrections. So here's an example of some of the corrections. Curse of Strahd, of course, is... a vampire, right?
Yep,
we get. So, of course, this is the appearance of the Vistani.
Yep.
So the Vistani is kind of their analog for gypsies.
Mm-hmm. Or Romani.
And the Romani, right. So, yeah, gypsies being the derogative term for the Romani. And so they're changing things and getting rid of implications such as uncivilized or drinking heartily or can seem lazy and irresponsible to outsiders. So trying to change a stereotypical depiction of,
right.
of the Vistani. Like I was talking about before when we were, oh, that was
the Wizard, magic cards.
Yeah, yeah, Wizards of the Coast again, magic cards. So it's like, I understand that in terms of European sensitivities, European. Mm-hmm. In North America, I have no understanding of culturally the discrimination that, you know, Romani face or how that actually works culturally. So we're going to have to incorporate every possible kind of social conflict and class structure problem into the sensitivity of D&D.
Well, here's a question, and I'm thinking of Vampire the Requiem stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm thinking about it is each, and I forget the word for it, each clan had a little sidebar that said how we see the other clans.
Mm.
And they were all different. And I'm bringing that up because, like, while I understand your point, and I understand that we might not have the cultural knowledge to kind of pick out what's, some stuff is just blatantly wrong.
Right, yeah.
But what I'm getting at is, unless there is an alternative description or sort of like a counter description, essentially, you're only presenting this culture in one light.
Right, right.
So I understand getting rid of that if there is not another voice in the product sort of counteracting that. And right. I don't necessarily mean like one or two stand-up characters,
yes.
you know, like Drizzt Da'Urden for Drow. Like, that's not enough.
One of the good
like,
ones.
Yeah, one of the good ones. Exactly. One of the good ones. Like, that's not enough. There right, has to right. be multiple perspectives of this one culture or whatever, all sort of presenting different ideas
right.
but is possibly one way to do it. And then there's just some other stuff that just take it out,
yeah,
regardless
yeah.
of who it is.
Right, right. I think that originally they're seeing this as color. You know, they're adding some, you know, some kind of background characters or NPCs you're going to run into, and they're going to have some crazy quirks. They're heavy drinkers, or they're, you know, whatever it is. It seems like it's getting granular. It's getting very down. So Dusk Elves are no longer so drunk. So there's a situation where there's some two guards.
Okay,
and one of the guards is so drunk that he has disadvantage.
Okay.
So instead, they're going to change that to older and more fearful than his younger brother. So they're going to take the alcohol implication out. So he has disadvantage because he's
old.
Fearful.
Older. Oh, fearful. Yeah. Fearful. Okay. Yeah, I heard older.
So his older brother is fearful. So they're no longer going to describe anything as sober or intoxicated.
Right. Well, I guess not knowing all that much about D&D lore, hating that word lore in the context of TTRPGs, are Dusk Elves presented as being prone to alcoholism? Because if so, then I kind of understand taking that out.
Right, right.
If not, then I understand it less, unless for some weird reason you want to try and like sanitize D&D of alcohol, which I'm not saying is what they're doing, but if that is what they're doing, it seems odd since the base assumption of D&D is kill people and take their stuff.
Right. And drink. You don't think about it.
I don't really know how you can sanitize that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was something that anime, like when it was localized for America, they took out all alcohol references and you know, things.
See,
yeah.
When I was growing up, it wasn't onigiri. Mm-hmm. It was the Pokemon characters were eating donuts. And it made no sense why you had these weird white triangular donuts right. with a square of seaweed at the bottom. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Esmeralda, an NPC with a lower leg prosthesis, having it replaced after a werewolf bite, no longer takes care to hide it from view to not imply that she's ashamed of it.
Funny you brought this up. I ran into something similar just today because I've been, I guess, a bit of a tangent. I've been working on cyberpunk, kind of simple cyberpunk stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think I brought it up on the podcast before, this kind of joke about cissexual, heterosexual white guy seems to be the default assumption for cyberpunk.
Right.
And so my game was, you can be anything except that.
Oh, right, right.
Right? And I've kind of been working out ways to do that and realized it was kind of mechanical, and I was trying to use mechanics to fix something that was a player issue rather than an actual game issue.
Mm-hmm.
Someone today brought up, okay, well, if you are highlighting that the protagonists of this cyberpunk game are marginalized identities, do you think you should include abled and disabled as something for the player to consider?
Mm.
And I said, that's a great point. I hadn't considered it, and I absolutely should do it.
Mm.
But then I feel you run into the pitfall with, especially in cyberpunk game, of cybernetics, of being able to replace and
right.
fix body parts. And I think I don't have the knowledge to navigate that because, I guess, getting back to that Esmeralda character, a lot of responses I got were, I would absolutely fix myself with cybernetics given the chance.
Mm.
but I'm also still disabled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how to present that without making people who fix themselves with cybernetics kind of be the default, and then people who don't be left as broken.
Right, right.
So I think what Wizards was doing there is hiding the prosthetic means you're ashamed of it,
mm-hmm.
and kind of unintentionally says people who also have prosthetics should probably be ashamed of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's just like, no, this is who I am.
Right.
I have a prosthetic. I'm not going to say draw attention to it, but I'm certainly not going to try and hide it,
right.
because that implies something shameful.
Mm.
So I see what they were doing.
Right.
And I also get that it's a difficult thing to try and navigate.
That's true, because you don't want to say, I mean, you're starting, most of these judgments and things are starting from a point of able and traditional,
right.
standard kind of default thinking. I think those people feel it's a little bit difficult to try to make a complicated character that that does feel incomplete, that would have some color, some motivation, some interest by, I need you to do this because I want to be whole again. Mm. I want to, you know, and there's nothing wrong with creating a character like that. But if, like you're saying, there's no alternate view of that, then
right.
it just means if you're missing something, you're broken. If you're
right.
missing something, you're not whole. I think that is difficult, but to kind of go down to that and just try to, I don't know, like sanitize everything in a way that you're going to lose some interest and some complication. I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know if enough people, I mean, so one more example.
Sure.
And then I'll kind of tell you what I think is just really going on. So Tomb of Annihilation,
mm-hmm.
in the port of Nazara and Chult, these areas are inspired by African cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So they're using terms like exotic, tribal, and savage in reference mm-hmm. to these mm-hmm. places. And the exotic wares, tribal goblins, and things. So they are taking away all of those references. So now they're making it a bastion of civilization and commerce in a terrifying land. So taking away all references to savage, tribal, exotic. But the interesting thing that they did leave is in the law and punishment section, they make a specific reference to saying slavery isn't illegal in Port Nazara, but it is frowned upon. So they left a really odd kind of dated reference. Like, maybe let's just take that completely out of an African theme setting.
That's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
They would say it's then frowned upon.
Frowned upon.
Yeah, I don't know.
So there's some odd things. So the motivation for this, I really don't think. Maybe individuals.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to judge individuals because I think people have good intentions. But overall, the corporate entity of Wizards of the Coast and their parent company, Hasbro, don't give a damn about your sensitivities. Don't give a damn about offending you.
Yeah, probably not.
They are just shoring up. You know, they're just maintaining their lead. They're just, you know, maintaining their stock price. They're keeping shareholders happy because there aren't going to be articles criticizing D&D for being racist or ableist or xenophobic.
There are in the circles I know.
But and because they know and they are seeing like Paizo and other companies being more active, being more socially sensitive, being more active and making changes more quickly. I just think this is about maintaining their lead and saying, hey, yes, see, we did something. We did something. We're making changes. And these changes are small and kind of insignificant. And I really think if they cared a lot, just like my discussion of Lovecraft, you shelf this whole thing and you say, we're going to start with a non-Eurocentric fantasy-based system that doesn't have any of these problems, that we're going to start clean slate, which they will not do.
You won't have D&D then.
But I'm just saying, I love the old original spirit of D&D, but it's got baggage.
Yeah.
And you have to acknowledge that. And if you acknowledge it, it's okay to play it. There's nothing wrong with you for playing it because it's a good way to kind of think about those things and realize where we've come to, you know, realize how things have changed.
I don't know if I would agree with you where it's a good way to think about these things, because as I said in that 40K discussion, unless there is something in the universe to kind of point out, hey, maybe these things are wrong,
right.
it's going to go over some people's heads, which I don't think you can avoid.
But at the table, though, I think some people, I mean, there are people that will enlighten other people. I think interacting with this world, you'll have somebody that says, I don't know about this. And like, why? What do you have a problem with this? And then it's a discussion.
It's a discussion. I also think I see that going two ways. The smaller way I see that go, or the less frequent way I see that going, is the person bringing it up and then sort of discussing it at the table. However, that would probably fall on a person of color, which ends up becoming emotional labor, which is not something they should be forced to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other way I see it going is the person removing themselves from the game and going to a different group where that thing is already understood. I agree with your point about Watsi and Hasbro probably just patching this stuff.
Mm.
I guess my counterpoint to that, and something I didn't expect to kind of get into in a tabletop RPG podcast, can you expect a company to be ethical? My answer is no. So I agree they're probably just doing it to maintain their lead or to maintain customers. I think that's the best you're ever going to get with a corporation or a company. And so to me, it's not an issue. But if kind of the end result is something more positive, I kind of don't really care why they're doing it.
I think this kind of thing, it's just a little bit silly how much they pretend to care.
Okay, I can agree with that. And I also, kind of like we discussed before, editing this, well, and it's not completely gone because there are still records of it, but like editing this stuff out kind of isn't acknowledging the problem. Where it might be better to just have like a big old disclaimer at the front of the book saying, you know, hey, we've kind of moved on from a lot of this stuff. Right. However, to erase it is to kind of pretend it didn't exist. So we're at a different place now, but these are being presented as they were originally to kind of, I guess, maintain, I don't know, something. Similar topic. I recently got my physical copies of the Triple Ace Games All for One Regime Diabolique game. That's the Ubiquiti-powered French Musketeer supernatural horror mashup.
Nice.
That was printed in 2010. And reading it again, I ran into some similar issues where I guess one of the big ones is I got an adventure compendium and a main plot point in that first adventure is one of the NPCs is Romani is accused of witchcraft specifically because of that. Throughout the book, they call her a gypsy. And even though this is set in 1636 France, I kind of looked at that and went, the other thing was all the characters have to be male, which I understand. French Musketeers.
Right.
And to Triple Ace Games' credit, they had a supplement called like the Queen's Musketeers. If you want to play a female musketeer, here you can do this. They also say the GM can just completely ignore this. They also point out that a female character could masquerade as a male to play a musketeer. And one of the sample characters is exactly that. And I guess where it kind of ran into problem for me is there's no mention of the person possibly being transgender. And it is presented not all the time, but as either kind of comedic relief, like this could possibly lead to some interesting role playing, you know, things, which again is possible, or as kind of like a negative. The other one is in the romance section, and there's a really decent section in that book about what swashbuckling is and how romance is a big part of it. And that doesn't mean sex. It means kind of more like courtship and stuff like that. Every instance of the target or the other party in the romance is she. Assuming all the characters are going to be playing male musketeers, I kind of understand. But I'm sure there were gay people in 1636 France. So even if you want to it's one of those things where I understand you want to stay or have some kind of historical reference. You also have to acknowledge the audience of your book and the sensitivities of the current time. So I think even though it was 2010, I look at that and say, this is kind of dated. Like I said on Twitter, none of the stuff in that book felt malicious. It just felt like you didn't think about this because you didn't have to. And that kind of came out wrong, but like given the people who wrote it, they probably didn't think about that kind of thing, and it comes across as an oversight rather than as, I guess, mean-spirited or something like that.
Right.
But getting back to the D&D thing, this is why you hire sensitivity readers.
Yeah.
This is why you hire people who have the knowledge and experience to say, here's why you shouldn't say this, or here's what you want to say instead, or have you thought about this kind of thing? And that also is what gives its authenticity.
And another thing that I think the bigger game companies are missing is their published adventures aren't like these holy texts. You, in the hands of a experienced DM that knows his group, they're just going to be cutting and hacking and slashing stuff that doesn't work, that seems weird or awkward, or, you know, in the case of a prosthesis, if you're playing with a veteran that happens to have a prosthesis, it's like, okay, we're not doing that. I think a lot of this will be solved at the table, and for these companies to say, well, you know, we bestow upon you this perfect text. It's like, we're just going to pick and choose from what you wrote because it's not a perfect piece of.
You are, and you didn't say this, but I still think the company has some kind of responsibility. I guess I'm not a software person, but it kind of seems like the companies often say, patch this yourself, which is kind of not good enough.
Yeah, that's true. And especially if, you know, the prices you're paying for these books, you want them to be a complete, polished, like, well-realized.
So basically, work. Like, I paid $50 for a hardback book right. that might as well have blank pages in it. Right. I mean, to be extreme.
Yeah. But. It's funny you said that because that actually made me think of what the ultimate version of this is. Like, well, when we're in like, you know, 10th, 12th edition of D&D, they basically are going to just be giving, there'll be a book with a big dragon ampersand on the front, and they're just going to hand it to you and open up. It's going to be totally blank. There's like, you decide your world. You decide your system. You decide your adventures because we have no idea.
Yeah, the world's greatest role-playing game can already be anything you want. Yeah, yeah. Right. Sorry.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's difficult. And I think some of these classic adventures, people will homebrew, you know, kind of port them to newer editions if they want them. Archive them. Just let them go. This was a popular adventure in 2E. This was a popular adventure in 3E. Just let it go and start fresh if you're not going to totally, if you're just going to be patching the game system and the lore and the history of D&D, then just start fresh and do new adventures that are not going to run into those things.
Yeah. But you don't mind that. That would require hiring more people and paying them rather than just updating old material.
Right. Yeah. Just giving it to an editor and say, here, change this. Yeah. So I was praising Paizo. They just apologized.
Oh, yeah.
Because their police-themed adventure path has some people during this time a bit upset. It's a bit bad timing, I think, on their part. But The Adventures of Edgewatch is an upcoming adventure path for Paizo in which the players take the roles of police. And Paizo,
City Watch.
Yeah, right. And Paizo has posted an apology for the themes in this adventure path, even though it is not yet published. It was just announced. So I think they're going to back off of this. And this thing may not reach publication during this time.
They might not. The thing I read, I think I read the apology, but the thing I also read said something along the lines of, we can't delay or push this back. Like it would financially hurt us too much to delay or push this product back. Mm-hmm. And I think what they did say they would do is put options in the front of the book for playing it as not cops, which kind of seems like a patch.
Right.
You know, where, like, what are you going to do? Go through with a marker and cross out every time it says City Watch, City Watch, City Watch.
Right.
You know, so I guess, am I glad they apologize? I don't know. It's something they had to do. Mm. And I understand this probably didn't have malicious intent, just really bad timing and knowing how long it takes to produce these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the internal workings of Paizo, but I also kind of tend to believe them when they say it would hurt far too much to not release this now. Mm-hmm. But
I think that shows that how they're a little bit more agile, they're a little bit more receptive and a little bit more, they communicate with their community, I think, a little bit better than Wizards.
Do you think that's because they're smaller than Wizards?
Yeah, and I think they have to, and I think that's how they made their bread and butter, is based on, hey, you don't like 4E, do you? So let us know. One more thing that happened is Origins Online is canceled.
Oh, okay.
So Origins was canceled because of, you know, the pandemic. Now Origins Online is canceled. And so Origins is run by GAMA, which is the Game Manufacturers Association of America. And some people have, I think, a pretty big problem with this organization.
Okay.
I think it has a lot to do with diversity. I think that because it's a board, it's they have a
board of directors or whatever.
Presiding board of directors. And it's kind of all one color.
Right.
Yeah. And so when they announced Origins Online and set up the online panels, and people were going to be exhibiting and buying tickets for this virtual convention. Yeah. Somebody called them out about their lack of Black Lives Matter support. They've made no statement. They said nothing. And so creators of color started to drop out, started to protest. And then people supporting them started to protest as well. So it just kind of snowballed, and they realized, okay, whoa, we've got a problem here. Right. Obviously, people have a problem. You know, board game creators obviously do have a problem with this organization and how it's run. So quickly they rushed out a statement saying, the Game Manufacturers Association of America believes Black Lives Matter. We unequivocally condemn racism and violence against people of color. So a big statement to kind of catch up on something that they didn't do and people were kind of holding them accountable for. The thing that they said is, anybody that wants to donate the money they've paid for their virtual badges or things that are now not, instead of crediting, we will donate them and then match them to advocacy groups and to support. And a lot of people were, you know, kind of upset about that's kind of a half step, or they would rather get the money themselves and donate it themselves instead of it going through this organization, which they don't believe is being very honest about that. I thought that was interesting. interesting. This hasn't really come up before. And I think the timing of this, so this convention already being crippled and losing money because they can't physically hold it, is trying to compensate and also help the people, you know, promoting their the companies promoting their products by doing a virtual stuff. And then it'd be it completely collapse.
Gen Con's still on though, right?
Gen Con's gone, and there's a virtual Gen Con, I think, is still, Gen Con online is still happening, but you never know.
I think any panel there probably going to be all one color too.
It's difficult, but it's, you know, in these times, it's interesting to see where this stuff manifests, and we're going to continue to see this. And yeah, certain industries and hobbies, I think, are a little bit more susceptible because they need to respond to their audiences, more. And so gaming, you know, tabletop is one of those. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's Hivemind, HYVEMYND. Synthwave and Vaporwave color schemes for that cyberpunk RPG.
Nice.
And how about you?
And I do a single panel gag cartoon. So I live stream that every week, Monday evening, North American time. You can find that at abusecartoons.com. It's live stream on both Twitch and YouTube. Follow the cartoon on Twitter at abusecartoons. If you'd like to get a hold of Idle Red Hands, please visit idleredhands.com. The podcast and posts of all of our videos are available there. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. And if you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/idleredhands. So one last thing I wanted to bring up. We recently did a podcast episode about how to play Star Wars. We're talking about the different systems that we've all had experience with and kind of what makes the best experience and what is a Star Wars game, like what things have to be in there and what things you don't need to be able to do, or you that kind of go outside of what feels like Star Wars. Something came up that made me think a lot about kind of what went wrong with the newer movies and why Mad Max Fury Road felt so satisfying. The funny thing is, this is a quote, a Joseph Campbell quote that was read by George Miller at some sort of press conference or at some sort of meeting that really talks about, you know, that monomyth, that thing, that satisfying thing that resonates across cultures that people enjoy in movies. And I think that sort of thing is missing from recent Star Wars and as far as, you know, everything that's being piled into the lore. And also why people enjoyed The Mandalorian and it felt more satisfying is because it gets closer to those sort of hero with 1,000 faces, things that Joseph Campbell talked about and have inspired George Lucas and a lot of other people. So George Miller read this quote. I think this is an interesting quote when you're thinking about what a hero is and what they need to be doing within a narrative. And so let me read this. "We have not even to risk the adventure alone, for the heroes of all time have gone before us. The labyrinth is thoroughly known. We have only to follow the thread of the hero path. And where we had thought to find an abomination, we shall find a god. And where we had thought to slay another, we shall slay ourselves. Where we had thought to travel outwards, we shall come to the center of our own existence. And where we had thought to be alone, we shall be with all the world." So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye. And on